Good afternoon, everybody, and happy Sabbath. Hello and happy Sabbath to those on the internet. Hope that all works well today. The title of this message today is The Prophetess and Judge, Deborah, Lessons from Judges 4 and 5. So if you care to, please turn to Judges 4 and 5. That's where we'll be pretty much throughout this message. That's Judges chapters 4 and chapter 5. Deborah was a prophetess and the fourth of 12 judges in Israel. She was the only female judge. As a prophetess, she heard God's voice and she shared his word with others. As a judge, her wisdom led the Israelites to seek her guidance and settle disputes. She must have been a very wise woman and recognized as such, and besides God working with her, obviously. She served at a time when the Israelites were oppressed by the Canaanites, the very people that they were to have removed from the land when God gave that land to them. But now they were oppressed by these people. At this time of Deborah, there was a 20-year period of time during her life when this was a 20-year period of oppression, and it had been preceded by 80 years of rest, and that had ensued after God used a previous judge. There actually was a second judge between this judge named Shamgar, but this 80 years of rest that ensued did ensue after God had used a judge by the name of Ehud, E-H-U-D, to subdue the oppression of the Moabites in that particular case. And that period of 80 years of rest that preceded this 20 years of oppression by the Canaanites ended when the children of Israel, and I quote, again did evil in the sight of the Lord. As I've already pointed out, the story of Deborah is found in the book of Judges, and it's the same story in chapter 4 and in chapter 5, but chapter 4 is more in plain language. And then we have a song or poetry in chapter 5 kind of retelling the story and adding some additional detail. We're going to look at both of those. Today I'd like to review the account of Deborah and other key figures found in Judges 4 and 5 and see what lessons we might glean from it. So I'm going to fairly quickly, I hope, otherwise Tony's going to be really mad at me, fairly quickly go through Judges 4, the prose account, or the everyday language account, and then through Judges 5, the poetry account, and then we'll kind of summarize some lessons, and the lessons will go pretty quickly. So, if you want to follow along in chapter 4, I'm pretty much going to just go through both of these chapters. So, beginning in verse 1, when Ehud was dead, the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. Thus ended that 80 years of rest that I mentioned. And you can kind of read about that if you want to in Judges 3. Verse 2, chapter 4 said, so the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. And the commander of his army was this general by the name of Sisera, who dwelt in a town whose name is as hard for me to pronounce as probably for you, so I'll just let you read that. The first part's not so bad, Harosheth. Verse 3, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord after this 20 years of oppression. So the children cried out for help, cried out to the Lord, for Jabin, this king of the Canaanites, this ruler who was up in Hazor, he had 900 chariots of iron, and for 20 years he had harshly oppressed the children of Israel. Now, verse 4, Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at that time. And she would sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the mountains of Ephraim, and the children of Israel came up to her for judgment. Then she sent, verse 6, then she sent and called for Barak. I had a student once named Barak. At least that's how he pronounced it. It means lightning. The son of Abinoam from Kadesh. So Deborah calls for Barak, and she has a message from God for him. And she says, "Has not the Lord God of Israel commanded, go and deploy the troops of Mount Tabor, take with you 10,000 men of the sons of Naphtali and of the sons of Zebulun?" And this wasn't a question. She was telling him this is what God wanted him to do. And further in verse 7, Deborah says, take with you these 10,000 men, and against you I will deploy Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his multitudes at the river Kishon, and I will deliver him into your hand. And Barak said to Deborah, and this is one of those sort of notable parts of this chapter, Barak said to her, which kind of maybe illustrates some of the level of lack of manly male leadership at the time, but he said, "Hey, I'll do this if you'll go with me." And she says, "Well, then I'll go, but if you will..." I'm sorry, I'll just read it because I'm going to mix it up. If you will go with me, then I will go. But if you will not go with me, I won't go. I'm not doing it if you don't come with me," he says. And this is one of the leaders, right, saying to her as the judge. So she's agreed to go with. And she reminds him, though, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, there will be no glory for you in the journey you're taking, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman." And she's not necessarily referring to herself there, as we'll see, although she could be in part. Then Deborah arose and went, and Barak to Kedesh. And Barak called Zebulun and Naphtali to Kedesh, near where this battle was going to take place. And he went up with 10,000 men under his command, and Deborah did go with him. Now we get to this verse 11, and we see a new player in this, and his name is Heber, the Kenite. And he was living down near Kedesh, but he was a Kenite. He wasn't an Israelite. And we found that he was, if you read through, he was kind of playing both sides of the fence, because he was down living near the Israelites, but he was also pretty cozied up with the Canaanites. And he hears about, what's happening and how Barak is amassing these troops, and he tells. Well, this is all part of God's plan, but he lets the Canaanites know that that this army is going to get together in a certain area, and kind of gives them up. So verse 12, he says, "And they reported to Sisera that Barak the son of Abinoam had gone up to Mount Tabor. So Sisera gathered together all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the people who were with him." So there was additional army as well, from the town he was from, to the river Kishon. Now, the river Kishon, like a lot of rivers, is bordered by a plain. It's floodplain, right? And so one thing about this time, this period, and I could bring this up later, but the Israelites were kind of forced to be living more in the hill country, because the chariots could run pretty well on the flatlands and the main highways. We'll read more about this later. So when Sisera understood that there was going to be this battle near this river on this flat plain, he thought he had a killing lined up, because he had 900 chariots of iron. As we'll see, the Israelites were very underarmed, and it looked like it was going to be a slaughter. continuing in verse 13, so Sisera gathered, I guess I read this, but Sisera gathered together all his chariots, remember 900 of them, and headed to the river Kishon. They thought they were going to have easy pickings. Well, then Deborah said to Barak, somewhere in those days when this is all happening, she said, "Up, for this is the day in which the Lord has delivered Sisera into your hand. This was it. This was going to be it. She said God had indicated to her that that's what was going to happen, and it was time for the battle to happen. So Barak went down from Mount Tabor, I'm in verse 14, with 10,000 men following him. And verse 15, and the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army with the edge of the sword before Barak. And Sisera alighted from his chariot and he ran. And the way I take it is he ran pretty quickly, just the way I take it. Pretty early on, recognizing that this isn't going to go the way I had hoped. And I think seemingly in a rather cowardly act, kind of abandoned his troops pretty quickly. That just seems to be how it played out. So Sisera got off his chariot and ran away on foot. But Barak pursued the chariots and the army actually in the opposite direction from the direction that Sisera had gone on foot. And he followed the chariots and the rest of the army. And you can see that all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword, and not a man was left. Well, I guess one was, right? Sisera was left. So verse 17, however, Sisera had fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber. So actually he went to, remember, Heber's the one who had directed him and kind of given him the goods on where the Israelites were going to be. And he thought he had an ally there, and he fled to that home. Now he wasn't, the man of the house wasn't there, but his wife was Jael. So continuing in verse 17, or let's just start in 18. And Jael went out to meet Sisera when he came on foot and she said to him, turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me. Do not fear. Don't worry. I've got this taken care of. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to hide you. And when he had turned aside with her into the tent, she covered him with a blanket. And then he said to her, please give me a little water to drink, for I'm thirsty. So she opened a jug of milk, gave him a drink, and covered him. And he said to her, stand at the door of the tent, and if any man comes and inquires of you and says, is there any man here? You shall say, no. Then Jael, Heber's wife, did away with him. And I'm not going to read through the detail on that. You can read that yourself. But she killed Sisera, and he died. And it was some time after that, doesn't say how long, in verse 22, that Barak pursued Sisera. And Jael came out to meet him in front of her tent, and she said, come, I'll show you what I did. The man you seek is no longer living. And when he went into her tent, there he was. So on that day, this is now in verse 23 and 24, on that day God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan, because he slaughtered his army and killed his top general. and this was all done in the presence of the children of Israel. It must have been incredibly encouraging. They now could see things turning from that 20-year period when they were oppressed and God's hand just wasn't with them. So this was done in the presence of Israel. Had to be very motivating in verse 24. And the hand of the children of Israel grew stronger and stronger against Jabin, king of Canaan, until they destroyed Jabin, the king of Canaan. And that's pretty much the story in just kind of plain language. But then there's this additional account, and I'm just going to go right into it, and I'll try to skip through some of this a little bit more, best I can. I'm not very good at that. But verse number 2, then, in chapter 5 now of Judges, this is this poetic account, but there's going to be some more details. And verse 2 says, verse 1 says, then Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinoam, sang on that day, saying, and here it is. Verse 2, when leaders lead in Israel, when people willingly offer themselves, literally that word willingly offer themselves is volunteer, bless the Lord. Good things happen. When leaders lead in Israel and when people willingly offer themselves, great things happen that are going to cause them to bless the Lord. Verse 3, hear, O kings, give ear, O princes. I will sing to the Lord. I will sing praise to the Lord of God of Israel. Lord, when you went out from Seir, when you marched from the field of Edom, the earth trembled and the heavens poured and the clouds poured water. So we get a little information here that at this time there was a huge rain. There was huge rain either during or just prior to the battle, I'm not sure which. And it says, the mountains flowed and gushed before the Lord, this Sinai, before the Lord God of Israel. So there was some kind of a flood. And all of a sudden, what seemed like an advantage for the Canaanites to be with their chariots on flat, dry ground, they were in mucky, miry ground that was on this floodplain with all this alluvial soil that when it gets wet, it gets muddy, and their chariots were bogged down, and suddenly it not only was not an advantage, it was a disadvantage because these chariots were going to be getting stuck. Verse number 6. In the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were deserted. So they're kind of going back here now, and they're singing about the period of oppression and what it was like then. And they said the highways were deserted. The reason the highways were deserted was because chariots could run on those highways. And it says, and the travelers walked along the byways. Village life ceased. It ceased in Israel because they had those chariots. And those chariots could get to places quickly and maneuver quickly. And because it was such a superior to anything that the Israelites had, which may have been no better than really like farm implements, they were at a decided disadvantage. And that's why they abandoned the towns, villages, and many of them lived in the hills where the chariots couldn't go. So it says that the village life ceased in Israel until I, Deborah, arose, a mother of Israel. And it says in verse 8, referring to the Israelites, they chose new gods. They chose new gods. Then there was war in the gates. Not a shield or spear was seen among 40,000 in Israel. And why? What was the big reason that God had taken his blessing away, that the people had fallen into oppression? Was because they chose new gods. Verse 9, then let's go on to verse 9. And they're singing here, this next portion is a section that's sort of related to the same thing, and it's a pretty good long section from verse 9 all the way to verse number 23 that's really talking about, it sort of relates back to verse number 2 when it said, when the leaders lead and when the people willingly offer themselves. Well, this verses 9 through verses 23 sort of reiterates this point, but it also calls out those people who didn't do their share. These folks who, while they had experienced the blessing of all the 12 tribes helping to subdue the land originally, now at this later period, didn't show in that sense the same courtesy and go help their descendants, go help them. And we'll see that here as we read through this. Verse 9, my heart is with the rulers of Israel who offered themselves willingly with the people. And you see their heart wasn't with those who didn't, as we'll read on. Bless the Lord. Verse 10, speak you who ride on white donkeys, who sit in judges' attire and who walk along the road, far from the noise of the archers among the watering places. There they shall recount the righteous acts of the Lord, the righteous acts of his villagers in Israel, who stepped up. Then the people of Israel shall go down to the gates. Awake, awake, Deborah. Awake, awake, sing a song. Arise, Barak, and lead your captives away, O son of Abinoam. Then the survivors came down, the people against the nobles. The Lord came down for me against the mighty. From Ephraim were those whose roots were in Amalek. After you, Benjamin, with your peoples, from Machir rulers came down, and from Zebulun those who bear the recruiter's staff. And the princes of Issachar were with Deborah. As Issachar, so was Barak, sent into the valley under his command. But so they're talking here about the people who came and helped out. And then all of a sudden it switches here. And I will skip some of this, but if you read through starting in verse 15, it calls out Reuben. The tribe of Reuben really didn't come up. And verse 16 says, why did you sit among the sheepfolds? You know, you're kind of rich and increased in goods down there, and you had a lot of flocks, and things were good for you, but you didn't come and help when God was calling together an army. You chose to just sit and hear the piping of the flocks, as we read in verse number 16. And Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan, and Dan remained on its ships, its merchant ships. And Asher continued at the seashore and stayed by his inlets. Zebulun, now we go back to those who did the right thing, who put themselves on the line. Zebulun is a people who jeopardized their lives to the point of death. Naphtali also on the heights of the battlefield. The kings came and fought. Then the kings of Canaan fought in Taanach by the waters of Megiddo. They took no spoils of the silver. They fought from the heavens, meaning God helped. The stars from their courses fought against Sisera, and the torrent of the Kishon River, which flooded and swept over its banks, and it swept them away. The ancient torrent, the torrent of Kishon, O my soul, march on in strength. And the horse's hooves pounded the galloping of his steeds. Remember, this is kind of in verse, in a poetic sense. I'm not very poetic. Verse 23, though, this is crucial. It says, curse Meraz. Meraz was a town in that area where the battle took place, and apparently the people in this town of Meraz did not participate when they were the very ones standing to benefit from the actions of this battle. We see in verse 23, it says, curse Meraz, said the angel of the Lord. Curse its inhabitants bitterly because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty. And, you know, I couldn't help when I read this, I couldn't help think about a series that I'm watching, The Band of Brothers. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen that, but where there's such honor in sticking together. And, you know, for example, Captain Winters, honor in him being the one who was a point man and who never would have somebody do what really was his job to do as the leader and go in first or, you know, be leading up a troop of men. Couldn't help but think of that here. And this town of Meraz is actually not known where it is to this day. And some speculate part of the reason that's part of the curse, part of the curse was that that town and those people would just be completely forgotten about. And to this day, nobody really knows where that town is. Then we get to another section that just kind of calls out, verse 24 to 27, just simply calls out Jael, who got the honor of being the one who ultimately killed the general Sisera. Again, you can read that. And then verse 28 is super interesting, down through 30, and it's talking about the mother of Sisera and how she must have been home. It's singing about this, right, in a poem or in a song, and she must have been home wringing her hands, and she says, why tarries the clatter of his chariots? And, you know, she's worried about where is he. He's not back when she expected him. It was supposed to be a slaughter. She expected him home for dinner. She maybe had a hot meal waiting. I don't know. But it says her wisest ladies answered her, and they said, oh, don't worry. Verse 30, are they not finding and dividing the spoil to every man, a girl or two? I thought that was amazing. You know, you think about that they would just be so, I guess, vulgar, or accepting of inappropriate behavior. That's just the spoils of war. And they go on for Sisera, plunder of dyed garments, a plunder of garments embroidered and dyed, two pieces of dyed embroidery for the neck of the looter. So they're kind of just, you know, pointing out that, you know, there was women and family behind these folks who would do this oppression, and they must be home just waiting to get their piece of the pie, and, you know, they're going to find out different. And verse 31, just kind of getting to the end here, says, thus let all your enemies perish, O Lord. Just like this, you know, God, to God be the glory for the victory. And then the last statement in this chapter, it says, so the land had rest for 40 years. So keep that in mind. So now we ushered in a new period of peace for 40 more years. And this leads me now just to want to briefly go over some of the lessons that I took from this. And this will go very quickly. First of all, Leaders need to lead, and followers need to follow, willingly embracing the part of the body of which they are, right? There has to be leaders and there has to be followers. God can work with that. He will bless that. And I reference 1 Corinthians 12, but it's just simply the part where it talks about, you know, the foot can't be an eye, an eye can't be a nose. We all have our part. And when people accept their part and willingly take it on and contribute in that way, and the leaders actually lead and step out in faith, God can work with that, and great things can happen from that, as we saw here in the story with Deborah and the people. Next thing I took here is that God expects our participation. We can't just be benefactors of what God has done and then not do our part in the time of need. Remember that city of Meraz who just were like, well, they were probably ambivalent. This will happen or no, we might lose or something. And so they didn't even try. God expects our participation now that we're part of the army. A lesson that I took from this. And then third, strive to be like Deborah. And what was Deborah like? Well, she was a person that feared God and she sought his will. And thirdly, she looked for the good for God's people. She always had the good of the people and the nation. She didn't live up in that area where this was all taking place. Remember, she was from Ephraim, further south. So third point here is strive to be like Deborah. She feared God, she sought his will, and she always looked out for the good of the people. These are lessons that can apply to us now, all of us right now. I apologize, Tony, I'm going a little long, but I'm almost done. So in conclusion, when the people repented and united together to do God's will, he delivered them and he blessed them with 40 years of rest. But only 40 years. And why? Because 40 years, I mean, I'd like more, right? Why only? You guys got to figure, they got to figure it out, right? They started to look to God, they repented, they realized why they had gotten into that period of oppression. They'd come out of it. And they'd seen God's mighty hand, but it lasted for 40 years, and then it ended. And the answer for why, you can see in chapter 6 and verse 1, and it will sound very, very familiar. So the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. That's what happened again. They went back and they did evil in the sight of the Lord. You know, I already mentioned this. But the Song of Deborah really had summed up what it is to do evil in the sight of the Lord. You remember what it was? It was they chose new gods. And that's what happened at the end of the period of the 40 years. At some point, at some level, they chose new gods. Perhaps the greatest lesson contained in the story of Deborah is continue to choose to serve God, to resolve not to go back to serving our old so-called gods. And I'll finish with this scripture from Joshua 24 and verse 15. You all probably know what it is. If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose lands you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.